Elise Live. Expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Keitel with Realty First.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays here, 11 to 1 here on News Talk 750, WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. My email is on my website. You can find me there, thinkglink.com. Well, Barron's calls it the horror story, and the Wall Street Journal calls it the jobs double dip. And if you look at the numbers, you got to say that this is really, there's nothing better to call it than atrocious. This week's jobs numbers, the payroll numbers, were absolutely outrageously bad. Atrocious. Horrible. I mean, I don't even know what you can possibly say. Putrid, the Barron's called it. June's putrid employment report demonstrates beyond cavil the great American job machine badly needs cranking up. The week started off with ADP, which is a massive data payrolling system, giving yet another one of their predictions that we were going to add something like 157,000 jobs to the economy. 85 economists that were polled by Bloomberg said, yes, indeedy-do, we are going to be adding jobs in a big way this time, and we're going to keep on this roll, and there's momentum and all the rest. And in fact, they were all bit off, huh? A grand total of 18,000 jobs were added to the economy. That is the smallest increase since September of 2010, for those of you keeping score at home. Moreover, the numbers of jobs added the prior 2 months, right? We're talking about June, and these are for May and for April, were revised downward by 29,000 jobs in May. That basically cut in half what went on there. And 15,000 in April. And you're just, I mean, what can you possibly say? There are now, if you look at the numbers, even the U6, which had fallen back a little bit, is now above 16.2% maybe for the total number of unemployed, underemployed. People who have just thrown up their hands and gone out of the jobs market, another 200,000 of those. The unemployment rate, the official number, edged up to 9.2% and would have probably been higher. And it's just, I mean, when you're talking about jobs, I mean, this is a terrible jobs market. Seven people, roughly, if you include the USIC numbers, seven people are out looking for every single job that's available. Seven people are trying to get every single job. And that's just a massive number. And it doesn't mean that there aren't jobs available. I had a conversation with somebody at a big credit card company the other day, and she said, look, we have, you know, maybe 100 jobs that we've posted that we just can't get hired. But it's, you know, finding the right people. I'm looking to hire somebody right now as well. And it's just sorting through people who may be qualified, may not be qualified. It takes time. But in the meantime, where's the big job machine that's going on out there? And if you look at what's happening, if you look deeper into the numbers, the total numbers of jobs lost, many of them came from the government. The government is shrinking. The government on all levels is shrinking. Maybe not the federal government so much at the moment. But you are seeing, as states come around and start their fiscal years, you are seeing a massive reduction of payroll because the states can no longer afford it. And unlike the federal government, states have to balance their budget. And the way they balance their budget is by cutting people. And when you cut people, you have more people filing for unemployment. It's not that complicated, folks. What we are seeing, if you want to reduce the deficit, you can do it. It's just at the cost of human jobs. And maybe that's the right move right now. Maybe it's the right move for 40, 50 years from now. But it may not be the right move for anybody who's sitting at home, has been unemployed for 6 months or more. 45%, more than almost half of all the people who are out of work have been out of work for 6 months or longer. It's a frightening number. I mean, really frightening number. The economists got it completely wrong. Not a single one of the economists polled got it right. Which just tells you that you really ought to be very skeptical. Put on your journalist hat. That's what we do. We look at the numbers and we go, yeah, I don't know so much. Because when you look at who is out there pounding the pavement, when you see the emails, if you could see the emails that I get every single day from people, I just lost my job, I lost my job a year ago, I lost my job 2 years ago, you know, my heart breaks for them, and yours would as well. Because there are so many people who are looking for work and have just given up. And we don't even properly count the people who've been out of work more than 99 weeks. Right? So, roughly speaking, there are 14 million people out of work by the usual count of unemployment. And there are, as Behrens puts it, uncomfortably, some 25 million people out of work by the U6 measure. And 2 full years after the recession officially ended, June of 2009 was the official end of the recession, we haven't even recovered a quarter of the jobs that were lost. Normally, at this point in a recovery, you should be seeing 180,000 jobs a month. You'd see employment rise. We're seeing it rise 18,000, a tenth of where it should be. And people are going to vote with their stomachs. They always do. You can get on your high horse about anything you want in this world, but if you're starving or hungry or you can't pay your bills, that's how you're going to vote, because that becomes the thing that's yelling the loudest in your brain. Consumer confidence numbers are low. They're going to go lower. Business is jittery. There's a lot of uncertainty in government. The Republicans and Democrats are clawing their way to keeping the government open. August 2nd, we're like 3 weeks away from that. They're clawing their way to try and get to some sort of an agreement that will raise the deficit cap, right? Because we're at the deficit cap. And Treasury's trying to figure out behind the scenes what it can do to keep paying the bills and keep the lights on. And it's really dreadful. We're not making jobs. We're not making jobs. And it's a terrifying place to be, because when you don't make jobs, people don't go out and spend stuff. They don't buy new cars. They don't go buy new houses. They can't make the mortgage payments of the houses that they have. And so it rolls over again. What do you think about all this? Are we totally off base? Does anybody see it getting better out there? Even healthcare, which has been a harbinger of good news, not such good news this time. They lost 4,000 jobs. 404-872-0750. What do you think about jobs? If you're out there finding jobs, are you finding a job? Has anybody gotten a job recently? Would love to hear from you. Everybody would like to get a little bit of a boost, I think. Really, it is just, I just find it to be really scary. And then, on top of it, if you have a job, wages declined by a penny. The average work week fell slightly to 34.3 hours. We're behind the French right now, I think. It's just, you know, where was the good news? The percentage of working-age Americans with a paycheck fell to 58.2%. That's lower than a year ago. No wonder that a huge percentage of Americans, more than half of Americans, believe we're still in a recession. I feel like we're in a recession. Half the country's in a recession. Just not people in D.C. or on Wall Street, perhaps. 404-872-0750. While we wait for you to call in, we're going to take another call. Carl joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Carl.
Is this me?
Yep, this is you. This is me, Elise Glink. Welcome to the program.
I've got a question. The state of Georgia seemed to have put a tax lien on my credit report. I was looking online yesterday, and I'm kind of embroiled. They keep refusing my mileage. I drive for a living, and they keep disallowing the mileage that I claim on my truck. And
do you know why? Have they told you why?
Well, they said they want receipts, and I had my employer send them a letter saying I don't get reimbursed for anything, and they seem to don't seem to want to accept that. And,
well, do you have receipts? Maybe they're looking for gas receipts or some other way to keep track of the miles you actually drive. When I drive for my business, I actually have to track on dates on the calendar how much I drive and where I drive, and then
submit
that.
Go ahead.
That's what I submit to the IRS. Do you have something like that?
Well, I have a logbook that I sent in. It has the mileage because I use my truck for personal and business. And the only miles I send in, which are 36,000 miles a year, are with the state. But they keep disallowing it, and my employer sent a letter saying that they don't reimburse me for anything. I pay for everything out of pocket.
Sounds to me like you need the help of an enrolled agent. An enrolled agent is somebody who's licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS, who can help you sort through this and figure out what kind of an argument you need to make that you're not already making to the IRS and help get your paperwork in a place that the IRS will accept.
Well, my main question was, see, they put a tax lien on for like $1,000. They say, oh, that they overpaid me $1,000. So during this embroilment that I'm with the IRS, they went ahead and put a state tax lien on my credit report.
Uh-huh. Well, you have to fix the problem. The underlying problem is that they're not accepting your mileage, not the tax lien. Once you get the IRS or the state of Georgia to accept your mileage, they will take the tax lien off of your credit report, and that part will go away. But you have
How long does that take for them to take it off?
Well, it takes as long as it takes for you to actually get it fixed. And
I'm saying once it's fixed, how long does it take for it to get off? I mean, it doesn't take like several months, does it?
It might take 30 to 60 days. I don't know. Hopefully it won't take that long, but you've got to start by getting the underlying problem fixed. And for that, I suggest you talk to an enrolled agent. You can find one at the number 4GAEA.org, or just go to a Google search engine and type in Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. And they can help you go through your paperwork and figure out exactly what you're not doing or what box you haven't ticked off, and then they'll be able to help you unwind this problem from the source. All right, we're talking about jobs and the number of people who are unemployed and what's going on out there. What do you have to say about it? Charlotte joins us on the line from Tyrone. Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. I was wondering where do those figures come from? Who makes up the unemployed? And part of that question is, are individuals receiving unemployment benefits considered in that overall number? And having been on unemployment myself at one time, I know how easy it is to get unemployment benefits. Isn't that helping encourage certain people to not look for jobs?
Okay, I'm not sure which part of that you want first, but
both.
I think there's about six things. You know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics there are two different pieces to the unemployment. One measures the number of jobs that are out there,
mm-hmm.
and then one piece measures the number of people who are filing for unemployment, how long they've been in unemployment, and the way this is done is they send out people and they basically knock on doors. Are you employed? Are you not employed? How long have you been? You know, there's a survey that continues, and that's what most of this is based on, is a massive survey. And then you have another piece of the survey that just measures approximately how many Americans are born and die every single month, which that number is roughly about 131,000, 150,000, maybe 151,000. And so what you do, somebody, you know, at the Bureau of Labor Statistics takes all of these numbers and churns them and calculates them into some sort of readable statistic. Okay, so there's a number of different places where these numbers come from, and then the numbers get churned up and then the reports get issued. All right?
So are people who are retired counted as unemployed?
No. They're not. No, they're retired. People who are counted as unemployed are people who had jobs and no longer have them but want to be employed. Those people are considered unemployed. So when they say things like 200,000 people have left the workforce, that number is people who were unemployed, wanted to be employed, got so frustrated with their jobs they threw up their hands in the air and said, I give up and I'm either going back to school or I'm going to hide in a closet in my bedroom. Those people are no longer counted. And so the U6 is the measure that includes the broader measure of people. And so it's more than people who are just getting unemployment, to your point. I never found it to be that easy to get unemployment, and I did collect it once in my career about 22 years ago. But it does not include those people, you know, just the number of people who are actually collecting unemployment. It's a much broader look and a much deeper look at it. And so it's not really about, I really disagree that collecting unemployment is, and if this is where this conversation is going, I don't think we're going to have it today, but I disagree that the idea that you can collect a couple hundred bucks a week is going to keep you from getting a job. I think people have to realize it's very hard to get a job right now, and I'm sure people will call in and tell us that. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. It's 21 minutes past the hour. You're listening to News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on. We're talking about jobs and the abysmal jobs report that came out this week. The economy seems to be stalling, and I know that the government is all rah-rah about how we're not going to fall into a double-dip recession, but if history's any case to consider, it possibly could happen. Steve joins us on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
I just have a question or two. Okay, if taxes are at historic lows since the 50s, and businesses and corporations are sitting on record profits, and why can we not simply have, it's not a depression, but it's a mini depression, why can we not have, except for this ideological frenzy, phone-in-the-mouth opposition to government of the far right, why can we not have like a WPA program to build the roads and infrastructures of this country and other needed services? Why can't we use some government to employ people rather than have them sitting at home doing nothing? I don't get that. Can you explain that to me, please?
I can't, because I think the same thing. I've been saying for 3 years that we ought to really do something that's going to build America, rebuild crumbling schools, rebuild the roads, rebuild all those bridges. Remember, everybody's forgotten, but you remember that bridge that crashed in Minneapolis and downtown Minneapolis and 35 people died? They literally fell into the river? Well, that led to a huge study on the bridges all across this country, and they discovered, lo and behold, that about 85% of the bridges need to be redone in this country. Why?
Right, exactly.
What are we waiting for? Another crash and 35 more people are going to fall to their death? I mean, it's
right.
Ridiculous.
If federal taxes are at about, what, 18, 15%, something like that, I think below 20, we are the least major tax industrialized country in the world. I would raise it to about 28 to 32% and fund these unfunded liabilities. But that's just my opinion. I don't understand the opposition to government. You know, if it employs people, what does it matter?
I don't know. I really don't know. I know that there's, as you say, there's an idealistic look at what government is supposed to do. In my view, government's supposed to do the stuff that the rest of us can't do, that's too big for the rest of us. And there are things in this world that are really, truly too big for people and are too big for companies. I mean, Google is one of the biggest, companies in the world. Or look at Walmart with 1 million employees. But they're not in the business of building roads and bridges and schools. I mean, they do a lot of good. They donate a lot of stuff. They run a lot of green programs. But it's not their business to run the infrastructure of this country. So somebody's got to step up and do that. But to the point, we got a lot of people who are unemployed right now. I'm sure they'd like to be doing something. We're going to take more of your calls on the jobs issue, 404-872-0750. And if you listen to the show, you know that I believe that the housing crisis is never going to get better until we figure out a way to employ more Americans. It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
5 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us this morning. 404-872-0750. Online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. We're talking about the abysmal jobs market report today. You can tweet me your comments. I am at Glink, at the @GLINK. If you've got comments that you want to make about this topic, give us a call, 404-872-0750. Or if you would like to tweet me, you can do that at GLINK. Let's continue on with the calls. We have a whole bunch of people who want to talk about this. Sally joins us on the line. Hi, Sally. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What do you think about the job situation?
Well, I think it's horrible, but you had said, call in if you've heard about jobs available. And I seem to hear about a lot of jobs. And I have people that I know that are just happy collecting unemployment and not, you know, because it may not be the job that they want or it might not be making what they want to do. But in the last 2 months, and I talk to people all the time, I'm like, do you know of any jobs available? Not that I'm looking, but I know people that are. And I hear a lot about jobs that are available.
So your friends, how many people do this? Do you
I have,
five?
I have three relatives that, distant relatives, that have lost jobs,
mm-hmm.
and then they go on unemployment, and there's jobs available, maybe that are not what they want to do.
Or that they're not qualified for.
Well, it's hard not to be qualified for a warehouse job.
Hey, they may have some physical limitations. Who knows? Maybe
well,
they are
no,
qualified,
they,
maybe they're
trust
not.
Trust me when I tell you they
they're
don't.
Qualified. Okay. And
yeah,
they won't go on because they're making more than they would make at this
no,
job?
No, they're just happy making money and staying at home.
Okay.
And they're struggling.
Let's assume that that's true and there are three people like that in the world. Let's assume there's 3,000 people like that in the world. When you just look at the numbers and there's literally seven people who are unemployed for every job that is posted,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are some slackers out there, no question.
Right.
Are 25 million Americans slackers? I don't think so.
No, and I think you're absolutely, I know you're right, but I see a lot that's available, not a lot, I see quite a bit that's available in the past 4 or 5 months. And
you know what?
But they're filled quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just was letting you know that I talk to people all the time, all day long.
I love that you're seeing jobs that are getting filled. I just wish people would make more of them.
Yeah, I do too. And can I mention a company that was hiring recently?
Sure.
I was in a Best Buy's and I talked to a guy. I had to get a new computer, and he said, I asked him. I said, "Where do you work?" He's part time at Delta. He said, "We just hired a slew of people,
mm-hmm.
a ton of people." So they just finished. I said, "Are they still hiring?" He said, "I don't know." So, I mean, they may be, but he said they just hired a bunch of people. So
great.
I just wanted to let you know there are some jobs. They're few and far between, but if people really, really go out there and talk to everybody at the grocery store, when you're in an elevator, anybody, sometimes you might come across something that's, you know, available.
Well, those are great pieces of advice and absolutely central to any time you are looking for a job. You really have to make the most of it, and you have to make the most of every networking opportunity. So thank you so much for that. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. We have Ray joining us on the line from Fayetteville. Hi, Ray.
Hey, good to speak with you, Elise.
Nice to have you. What can I do for you?
You know, I would love to be a fly on the wall when you and Wes Moss are in the same room.
You know, Wes calls me the big bad bear.
Well,
and he is so optimistic. He thinks the world, but you know, that's his business, right? He wants you to think the world is great because then you're going to make money in the stock market and invest with him.
Well, hence the crux of my question. And because, you know, kudos to Wes for his optimism and reporting the numbers as they are. And kudos to you for reading the numbers as they are. So the crux of my question is, can you clarify me the apparent disconnect between the upswing in the stock market that we're witnessing and the numbers that you've been discussing since you came on the air this morning?
Sure. I can give you my two cents.
I mean, let me just say, my feeling is the people who are in the market are not stupid people. They read numbers. And the captains of industry are not stupid people because they do what they do. So I don't understand
how 85. You don't understand how 85 economists polled by Bloomberg could get it 100% wrong on the jobs numbers this month.
Yeah, someone's failed their tea leaf reading class.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I always say, and I've said this for the 14 years, ever since I started filling in for Clark, when people ask me about the future, my crystal ball is cracked. I keep it because it's a happy memory of times gone by, but it is way cracked. But here's the thing. Companies are making money. And what is an investment in the stock market? It's an investment in companies and in a company's ability to build for the future. Right?
Right.
So company and the stock market has always been a leading indicator, usually 9 months in advance. But when did the stock market hit its bottom? It hit its bottom in March, on March, Sam, my husband Sam's birthday, March 9th of 2009.
Yeah.
The official end of the recession was June of 2009, right? So the stock market then started its massive climb up. And what it should have been, if it normally was on track, because it was looking for all the signs that you normally see. And I think it was looking in kind of the wrong places, because what happened in September of 2010, but the first-time homebuyer tax credits ended.
Yeah.
And the repeat. So we had like a fake push from the government. The government has also been spending $1 trillion, $1.25 trillion buying stuff. They also have made interest rates basically zero. And companies can borrow at super low interest rates and make money at almost, a margin that we can't even touch. And so why has the stock market gone up? Why are there corporate profits? I don't think you have to be a genius to understand that. So that's the stock market. That's what I call Wall Street. The problem is what happened in 1937, right? So we all know what happened in 1933, and we saw the crash, and we saw the market got way built up again, just like it did now, and then the government pulled back on its spending, tried to cut the deficit, and the bottom fell out, and we ended up in a second massive double-dip recession that basically ended until World War II.
Right.
Okay, so where are we now, right? Here we are. Stock market's going up. The government, everybody's screaming about the deficit. The government's about to pull it back. The Republicans and Democrats are like killing each other, right? There's a presidential election next year. Where are we? So I look at these numbers and I am such an armchair economist, right? I'm all about, look, you don't have a job, you can't eat, right? That's just how it is, because I live in that real world. My income got hit like everybody else's in 2009, and, you know, you just have to make do. I don't live in a world where I have $25 million sitting in a bank account somewhere. So I live where I work, and I eat where I work. And so I look at what's going on here, and I say, how the heck is everybody in America who doesn't live on Wall Street and doesn't live in D.C., how the heck are they going to make this work? Because it's really, really hard when gas is $4 or $5 a gallon and your wages are going down and your hours are getting cut and 25 million people would like to be employed but can't be. I just look at that. So that's where I come from. And I think I'm pretty honest about it. Wes, on the other hand, is all about corporate profits and investing for the future, and he's riding the wave. And you can read numbers. It just goes to show you can read numbers in any way, shape, or form.
Well, but it's my perception that 3 years ago, Fortune 500, generally speaking, was dumping employees and shutting facilities right and left. So now they're operating lean and mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are much more efficient now than they were 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But the numbers that we're looking at, that we're discussing today, are a stronger factor than what they did 3 years ago. And so my concern is that Wall Street is now ignoring the realities of Main Street, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, the New York Times wondered the other day when all the jobless became invisible. Like when these 25 million people just sort of like put on their Harry Potter invisibility cloaks. Because they're out there, and we seem to not be concerned about them. I mean, I think President Obama is really concerned about them, but he's concerned about everything. And right now, I think he's probably pretty concerned about keeping his job.
A friend of mine is a magistrate judge in the metro area, and I paid him a visit 2 weeks ago, and I asked him, I said, is your caseload affected by the current economic conditions that you can tell? And all he did was just give me a very wry grin and said, oh, yeah.
Well, I talked to the chief bankruptcy judge now and again for Georgia. She's an absolutely fantastic lady. And, you know, they're swamped. They're overwhelmed. And she doesn't like the dirty tricks that she's seeing some corporations and some of the, with the foreclosures, the stuff that's going on with it. She doesn't like that. And the judges are up in arms. But what are they going to do? In some cases, their hands are tied. There was an interesting story in the paper the other day in the New York Times that New York is losing judges. I think it was New York, might have been New Jersey. The judges, the state judges, haven't had a raise in 12 years. 12 years. And they're all leaving. A lot of the really experienced, good judges are leaving to go back into the private sector because as a partner for a big firm, they can make $1 million a year. And they haven't, and as a judge, they're making $131,000. And it's not that that's not a great salary, but they haven't had a raise in 12 years.
Well, my point was that his caseload is impacted because he's a lot busier man. There's a lot more unpleasant things going on out there on the other side of the law.
Yeah.
As a result of the economic
situation. You get a gray economy, you get a black market, you get all kinds of things. When people can't feed themselves, nobody wants to do that kind of stuff. You know, I believe in the goodness of, the good nature of men, right? You
yes.
know, King Richard the Lionheart stuff. I really believe most of us are like that. And if there is a way that we can make a reasonable salary and, you know, pay our way and put food on the table and live our lives in quiet enjoyment and go have a beer with the guys on the weekend, I think most people would really like to do that. But when that option goes away, you got to feed your family.
Yep, things get mean.
Things get mean. And I think we are breeding a really mean country in a lot of ways. And I worry about that. And I worry about civil unrest when people get hungry. Look around the world.
Yes. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ray. Appreciate the call. 48 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our call. Sue joins us on the line. Hey, Sue, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Hi. I am calling you for some advice. We have 8 rental properties that we're upside down on, and we used our personal assets as collateral. And we're now in our 60s, and I worry that we'll burn through our retirement before we're ever able to sell these properties.
And you may.
And do you have any advice on...
Are the properties rented?
They're all currently rented. We do all of the property management and all of the repairs ourselves. But we are in our mid-60s, and it'll reach a point that we cannot do the work.
Are you making money on the properties?
No.
So are you? So you're burning through your retirement to make up the difference? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I would say our repairs run about $10,000 to $15,000 a year, and in the end, probably around $6,000 is what it's costing us a year.
$6,000?
Mm-hmm.
And how much do you have in your retirement fund?
And we have about $500,000 in our retirement fund.
You can go a long time at $6,000 a year before you burn up $500,000. So that's okay for the moment. You're not in any urgent...
We have our current personal property on the market,
mm-hmm.
and our plan is to sell it and pay cash for something small that, you know, we will have it paid for and have a home to live in.
Okay.
I don't know if you have any advice on any ways to protect ourselves down the line.
The only way to protect yourself is to keep your retirement money in a qualified retirement account, because if you file for bankruptcy or you go and do short sales on these properties, they won't be able to tap that, although they'll be able to tap other funds and assets that you have.
Uh-huh.
I think you need to really, you're in a stable but delicate position, right? It's stable because you actually have the cash to keep making, you know, adding the $6,000 in. I think I would try to start selling these properties one at a time, or using some of your cash to pay off some of the properties so that they become cash flow positive, or at least enough so that it starts to cover the other property investments that you have. Maybe when you sell your property, instead of buying something small for cash, you'll move into one of these properties. until
they're not in areas though that I would live. I mean, they're all in low income areas.
Right. So then you're going to have to make some tough decisions. I think you should talk to, I don't know if you have a financial planner, but I think you should talk to either an accountant or your financial advisor and start to map out what the damage is going to look like. You'll probably need an attorney as well. If you do a short sale or just turn these properties back over to the lender, and what that looks like trying to get out from under it, and what this timing should be on it, and how you should go about breaking it down. But I don't have any magic bullets for you, Sue. I know you sent me an email as well. I read it this morning, and I've spent a little bit of time this morning thinking about whether there were any places that you could go to get assistance, and unfortunately, there isn't. You're, you know, fairly well capitalized, and these are the risks that you took. I'm not sure what you're going to be able to do. There's going to be pain down the line for this. The question is, how do you limit it and move forward with whatever you can? And I think that's going to be the key thing. It's 52 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Klink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. We're talking jobs and the economy today on the Elise Klink Show. What do you think? 404-872-0750. Online, thinkglink.com. You can tweet me as well. Sam joins us on the line from Athens. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. What do you think?
Well, you know, Barack Obama was on the news, like, I guess, what, a week or two ago? And he plainly said to most Americans, he said that, you know, one of the big problems is that these Bush tax cuts, you know, need to be repealed. And it just seems that we have a lot of corporate CEOs in this country that are making a lot of money, and it seems that we're mostly, we've become kind of like a, I mean, we are a profit-based economy, but, I mean, where is our common interest in everyone, you know, in this country? I mean, big corporations like, you know, fast food companies and oil companies, they know that there are changes that need to be made when it comes to our diet and when it comes to energy plans. They know that, but, I mean, they don't want to change anything because then they don't make any profit. And so when do we change America to, you know, really more of a country where corporations are looking out for the common interests of all Americans? And that could be done easily through, you know, like tax incentives, like giving corporations tax incentives for doing, creating jobs. And you know, they're arguing that, you know, you take away these Bush tax cuts, and that's going to take away from job creation. But, you know, jobs are created through innovation and new ideas and learning how to, like, you know, solve our problems with these ideas, not from, you know, tax cuts.
I would just say about the tax cuts that we haven't had these tax, you know, the Bush tax thing has been in place for a long time now. And, you know, certainly through the last 2 years, we haven't had an increase in tax in the Bush tax cuts. And I know that, you know, there'll be a few people calling in about this, but where are all the jobs that we've created over the last, you know, 10 years from this? So, you know, I just think that only saying, falling back in the position that, oh, if we just keep taxes low, we're going to create more jobs. Okay, maybe we will, but we're, you know, maybe we won't. I don't know. I just think that we need a little bit more than what we're seeing right now, and I'd really like to see it. I absolutely would like to see it. Sam, you've made some great points. Thank you so much for your call. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the Elise Klink Show, and I'm going to tell you what Warren Buffett said about how he could fix the deficit in 5 minutes when we get back. Stay tuned.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Klink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB, brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Welcome back. back, everybody, to the second hour of the Elise Kling Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750. Don't forget to check out my blog, moneywatch.com. You can find me. I write the home equity blog, and this week we looked at top 10 places that you might want to buy a vacation home. Sort of interesting idea. And then also on the Equifax personal finance blog, we are shifting over next month to a new format. It's going to be great, make it a lot easier to use the blog, but we have some great conversations going on now about how pets change things and could actually owning a pet, could homeowners who own pets get so frustrated with pet rules in their rental buildings that they're going to go out and launch a whole new home buying revolution? Gosh, I hope so, and so do a whole lot of realtors I know. All right, 404-872-0750. I promised you Warren Buffett's 5 seconds on how he could fix the deficit. Or he said, I could end the deficit in 5 minutes. Here's his quote for the day. I could end the deficit in 5 minutes. You pass a law that says anytime there is a deficit of more than 3% of GDP, all sitting members of Congress are ineligible for re-election. That was what he said to CNBC Friday morning, offering up his plan to end the deficit. And you never know, it might work. I also feel like you could end the health care crisis by forcing everybody in Congress to go out and individually apply with their families for independent health care insurance, which many of them have never, ever done and have no idea how to do. We'd probably take care of that just lickety-split. All right, let's go back to the phones. Is it Arlevia?
Yes, it's Arlevia.
Arlevia, what a beautiful name. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. You helped me about a month and a half ago on an issue that I had some concerns about from real estate.
All right, that's good news.
Shortly after you helped me, I got the letter in the mail that said, basically my property had not gone down that much, maybe about $5,000, that your property is now worth about $50,000 less. So I'm okay with that, but my question and concerns are, where are you going to offer other workshops, or where can we get information? Because when things happen, there's often not a lot of, you know, information out there, people to go to actually get help. And I love your show, so I was just wondering, are you going to offer more workshops so we can ask more questions, you know, get more in-depth information?
Well,
or
I'm very flattered that you find it helpful. First thing I'll tell you is that we actually, I don't know if you come to some of our past events, but we have podcasts for them for sale at the thinklink.com store for a few bucks if you want to go listen to some of our past events. And we also have a lot of e-books from those events, from those experts. And you should feel free to contact any of those experts, and all the contact information is online as well. Now, it's interesting that you ask about a new event, because I think we're going to try to pull one off in January. An investing event, and I think we're going to do it in a pretty big way. We're just sort of getting set on it. We haven't even come up with a name for it yet. I guess I should run a contest on the show and see who comes up with the best name for our new investing event. But I think we're going to do something like that, and we're going to try to do it for January. And I think we might partner with one of the local papers in town. So I think we might do something really fun. And then I'll also be hanging out for Carathon, which we have coming up in a couple of weeks. It's August, I think, 11th and 12th this year.
Okay.
And so I will be doing a special show like I always do with Walter Reeves, my good bud.
Okay.
And so I'll be around for that as well. And then we'll see what we can do about getting some other kinds of help in making that available, because I know that people are in very tough times. And it's, you know, when you get a letter in the mail saying that your house is worth $50,000 less than you thought it was, that just had to be devastating for you.
Yes. I mean, I'm not in, you know, and of course we have a lot of, you know, invested into our home, so I'm not in dire need. We only owe $106,000, but still, you know, when I get a letter like that, I'm like, you know, what do I do? What should we do? You know, should we pay it off, or should we, you know? So when I have questions like that, I'm like, you know, I love your show, and you do speak reality opposed to, you know, some of the hypes. I'd just like to get more information like that.
Well, you can always, you know, on thinklink.com on my website, we have just like 5,000 pages of information. And so you can look up foreclosure, short sale information if you're interested in that, or you can just look up refinancing. There's lots of resources. And, of course, you know, feel free to send me an email. I do look at all of my emails. We try to get back to as many people as we can. And if there's something more that I can help you with, let me know. And as soon as we know for sure about this event, and we should know by, I would think, the end of August, beginning of September, we will open up the doors. And one of the things we're doing, you know, in past events, I've been kind of limited by the space that I've had, so not that many people, you know, we could have maybe 300 people could come. This one, I think we're looking for a space that will let up to 1,000 people come. So people be able to come through the door, take advantage of the special people that we're bringing in to talk to you. And I hope to be able to, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we're going to be able to announce something very, very soon.
Great, because I'm not in the short sale refinance situation, but when it drops that much, I don't, you know, like I've talked to you before, I don't want to keep sinking money into, you know, putting things into a house that, you know, I've never, not ever, but that it will take me so long to get a return on, you know.
Right, you want to be very careful. Investment is really all about, you know, what you're doing going forward, and nobody likes to throw good money after bad. That's why investment advisors who are good will say to you, if you're thinking about a particular investment, like a particular stock or bond, they'll say, okay, well, if you're holding it today, right, and you're trying to decide if you're going to sell it or buy more, you know, do you think this is a good investment today? Don't just try and double down. Like, decide if you would make this investment from a clean slate, a clean start today. And if it is, then maybe that's something that you should continue doing. And the same thing is true with your house. I mean, people have to, you know, it's a new mindset to stop thinking about your house as being this massive investment. For a while, for maybe in the next 10 years in Georgia, houses are just going to be a place to live. And
okay,
I think that that requires a very, very different mindset. But if we can help you more, send me an email at thinklink.com, read the blog, and let us know how we can help out. And as soon as we know about this event, I will let you know, because it has been a while since we've had our last one, and I miss them too. I love hanging out with all you guys. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Mike joins us on the line from Covington. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
What's going on?
I just want to talk about the older people trying to find a job.
There are a whole bunch. I just saw on the news that the number of centenarians, people who are over the age of 100, are going to double again by the year 2020. So there are a whole lot of old people out there.
Well, you know, when you fill out an application now, most of the good companies is online.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't get to talk to anybody. And, you know, applications, if they really get serious, all they need to put is American or foreign. They don't need to put black, white, Indian, all that stuff.
Yeah. I think they do that because they're, in some cases, they get bonus points for doing that. But
I think so, too.
Are you looking for a job right now?
Oh, I am, and I'm looking for a sales job, but when you get interviewed, it's usually a young person, and they don't want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
See, I've been a salesman about 35 years.
Mm.
And I tell them, if I'm not in their top five sales quotes for this time next year, they can fire me. They don't want to hear that.
What do you think they want to hear?
Well, when I tell them that, you know, they say, you can't say that. I said, I've been a salesman for 35 years. I know I can do that. And they'll argue with you. I don't know.
What do you think you can do to change what you're saying to them? If you thought a little bit about how to pitch or sell yourself a little bit differently?
Well, I think a lot of times when you're talking to, when I say younger people, I'm talking 30, 35.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they interview mostly college kids or just a little out of college and everything, you know, and they have no clue about the sales program, you know, and they're they want to train them the way they want to train them. You know, they think we have bad habits and all that good stuff.
You know, I think it's a really tough spot that you're in, and I know because I've been hearing from seniors and people who aren't even seniors, but they're in their 50s, looking for a job and unable to get anybody to look at them. And it's true, people, you know, they're looking for those younger workers. But I know there's got to be some companies out there that value experience and education and, all the things that somebody like you brings to the table, Mike, and I'm really hoping that you find something. So you've been out there filling out applications and trying to get a job.
A slew of them, but the most of the good companies is online, and you don't really get to go in front of the person, you know, right. and they want you to send their resume and all that good stuff. But, you know, I want a commission job, and they don't have to pay me nothing if I don't sell.
Right. You would think that would just be, a gopher for the ground up.
Yeah.
You know, what I can recommend to you, and I'm sure you're already doing this, is to try and look for new places to make connections. Chamber of Commerce's or getting involved with different kinds of organizations like SCORE.org, looking for mentors, becoming a mentor. You never know. You may end up mentoring a 35-year-old who doesn't have any idea how he's supposed to hire for things, and you're going to be the guidance, offering some advice, and he'll turn around and go, wow, you're really smart. Maybe you should come work for us. So I think you have to kind of look at this in a new way, and I know that you sound like the kind of person who's got a load of experience and resource behind you, mental resources. Hopefully you can figure out a way to make that work for you. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Janet joins us on the line from Chamblee. Hi, Janet. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Our son lives up in the New York area. He owns a home. He took a buyout from his company he'd worked for a long time, a couple of years ago. And for the last 8 or 9 months, he's been working for as a contractor for another company.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a good chance, he thinks, at getting hired on permanently by sometime in the fall. And the question is, he's single. He'd like to refinance his house. And we're wondering, because we were just having this discussion the other day, how long would, because he can't refinance right now because he's a contractor.
2 years.
Really hard.
I'm going to jump in and just say at least two full years of being a 1099 he'll be able to refinance.
Oh, really? Of being an employee?
Yeah, you have to be, if you're self-employed, which is a contractor, I believe is what you're telling me he is.
Yeah, that's what he's considered.
So that's a 1099 as opposed to a W-2 tax form. And
no.
When you're, no, he gets a W-2?
No, you missed what I said.
Okay, go ahead then.
He thinks in the fall he'll get hired on as a real employee.
Understood.
So he'd have a W-2.
Okay.
How long would he have to work for them as a real employee to be able to apply to refinance his house and have a realistic chance of getting a refi?
Oh, I think he could refinance once he gets the full-time job pretty quickly.
Okay.
I don't think he'd have to wait too long. You know, sometimes they might want to see you be there 3 months or 6 months, but other lenders won't care because for them it's a snapshot. It's like, oh, here's your W-2. You have one. We see what you earn. The assumption is you're going to have that job forever.
Right.
Even though we know in the real world it doesn't happen, but lenders can only work on a snapshot. And so they take a picture the day he applies, they take a picture the day before he closes, and if everything looks the same and looks good, he ought to be able to refinance. The good news for him is interest rates are going nowhere. So it's not as though he's going to wake up in October 1st and interest rates are going to be 5% higher than they are now. The Fed has indicated it's just going to keep interest rates pretty much where they are on an indefinite basis until they see some reason to raise it. And so that means he'll have very, very low interest rates available to him down the line.
So basically, as soon as he does get hired on permanent, if that happens, he should be able to apply for a refi and...
Yeah, I think what he'd want to do is...
have a shot at it.
The first... He has to wait till he gets, a paycheck or two because they're going to ask to see it. But then I would have him pull a copy of his credit history and credit score from annualcreditreport.com.
Right, that's good. I mean, and he knows that drill.
But I would, before you apply, I would take that to a couple of different types of lenders and say, this is who I am. This is what I am. Assume this is the case. I'm not applying yet, but I'm just trying to get a sense of, is this enough for you to approve me for a loan, or what else would you need?
Yeah, am I in the ballpark?
Yeah, am I in the ballpark?
Okay. All right. Well, he's going to be very happy to hear that. So.
I'm so glad, Janet. You're welcome. Let me know what happens. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Stay tuned for more of The Elise Glenk Show on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. For new in-depth news coverage, don't forget to pick up this Sunday's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's a special report on how Atlanta public schools can bounce back from scandal and who's in charge of stabilizing the system. Let's do our prize pack. The WSB McDonald's weekend prize pack value is $294. It includes a pair of tickets to see Huey Lewis in the News, woohoo, in concert July 23rd at Chastain Park Amphitheater, presented by ASO Presents. A maintenance agreement for two complete HVAC tune-ups, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating, and a Lakewood 400 Antique Market $25 gift certificate. We're going to give all of that away to our fifth caller, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Clint. He's taking your call. All right, let's go back to the phones, 404-872-0750. Derek joins us on the line all the way from, it just says overseas. Derek, where are you calling from?
I'm actually in Taipei right now.
I am so excited to have somebody from overseas calling in. I have a bunch of listeners in England who listen to the show every single week, but I don't think I've had anybody from Taipei yet, so welcome to the program.
It's the magic of Magic Jack or NetTalk or one of those.
Oh, we love technology.
Yeah. At least my question is, when I get back to Atlanta in about 3 weeks, I need to find a place to invest about $50,000 that I've just received through an inheritance.
Okay, very nice.
I already have a Roth already set up and funded for this year. Kind of have a target funded account at Vanguard. And I do, with my wife, have some investments at TIA Cref already. I guess I need to know what else to do. As far as our house, that's fine, too. We owe about $175,000, and the 30-year mortgage, we refinanced it. I think it was last year or the year before, and it's about 5.0 right now.
Okay.
So I guess I need to know what options do I have.
Let's talk about what expenses you might have coming up where you'd want to use this $50,000. Is this future money, or is this, you know, we might have kids, we might want to take a trip, we might, you know, we need to invest for college. You know, what is this? What's the future look like for you?
No kids. There will not be any kids either. So it's a long-term investment.
Great.
For the future.
That makes it really easy. You're already over at TIAA Cref. So what I would do is think about putting that money away in a diversified portfolio. You got to look at everything together. But my good friend Dan Solon, and you might want to pick up his book, it's called The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read. Dan recommends that you basically can fully diversify with just three mutual funds, index mutual funds, which he likes the best. One would be a total stock market fund, one is an international stock market fund, and one is a bond fund. You take a little bit more risk, you just stick this money in there, and it grows and forever, and basically it'll rise and fall with the market, but you beat 85% of managed mutual funds, and that is a great low-risk way to go. So that's my best guess for you. Give a call to TIAA Cref and chat more with them about it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
5 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB and online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. Sign up for our free weekly newsletter, everybody. It is your key to all of the content we produce every single week at ThinkGlink.com. And that right now, that's about 20 to 25 pieces of content, articles, blog posts, information you need to make really smart financial decisions. We are here for you. It's all free. I know that's Clark Howard's favorite word, and I think it's just about one of my favorite words, too. Free. All free information for you. We just want to help you make smarter financial decisions. So one of the things that the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act is going to do for you starting July 21st is if a credit score is used to set certain credit terms to deny or revoke credit or change existing terms on a credit account, then banks and other kinds of companies will be required to disclose your credit score and other related information. really cool and important stuff. Now, right now under federal law, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion are required to provide you with a free copy of your credit report once a year. And I always recommend you go to annualcreditreport.com to get that, because the FTC is requiring those companies to put up that website and monitor that. And we know that you're not going to get scammed on it. However, in addition to the credit score, lenders must now disclose the range of scores. So what's good about this is you see free credit score, freecreditreport.com, freecreditscore.com, all this kind of stuff. It seems free, but a lot of these free credit scores that you're given are completely useless. It's not the ones that are used by, say, 85% of all creditors or lenders out there to make a credit-based decision. So, for example, there is something called the Vantage credit score that goes on a range from 501 to 999, or 990, I guess. But FICO, which is goes from 300 to 850, FICO scores are the ones that lenders use like 80-85% of the time. Vantage scores are not really used. But you get a Vantage score, and because the numbering system is different, you might think, oh, well, I have a 770 credit score, I have a really good credit score, and you might go apply for credit. But on a FICO scale, you probably only have like a 620 credit score, because 770 out of 990 isn't that great. But you don't know that because you don't have the context. And when you get the number, you're like, oh, my credit score is 770, but it's kind of a fake thing. And credit score, well, since 2004, mortgage lenders have been required to disclose your credit score when you apply for a mortgage loan. And if you get rejected, you're supposed to be able to see why and see the credit report that they rejected you on. But if you apply for insurance, utilities, or rental housing, and your score that's used is, you know, different from those based in loan-based decisions, you may not get that score. They may use a proprietary score or sort of multiple scores that meet the definition of a credit score, and the lender can choose one instead of all the scores. And so consumers really get confused around this whole idea of credit scoring and what it means. Now, it's actually now going to be regulated under the Federal Reserve Board and Federal Trade Commission, but it comes to you from the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Now, interestingly enough, maybe not surprisingly, there's been some like, oh, it's going to take us forever to get this done. The Fed has estimated it would take lenders on average 2 business days to update their systems to comply with the new requirements, although about 30 companies submitted public comments on the rules that said it could take weeks or longer. Barclays Bank in Delaware said that it would take 8,000 hours to comply with the new requirement. Who knows if that's true or not. But as of July 21st, you're going to get a whole lot more information about credit scores, and you should watch for that. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Let's go back to the phones. Betty joins us on the line from Stockbridge. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Elise. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding the Roth 403B and the Roth IRA.
Okay.
Are they mutually exclusive? I'm talking about someone who's 28 years old, single, earns $48,000 a year.
So a Roth 403B is, I think, similar to a Roth 401K, and that is after-tax money but done through the organization.
Right.
And it's a relatively new trick. It's only a couple of years old, and companies are just starting to adopt it. A Roth IRA is separate money. A Roth IRA is outside of that. So
right.
If you earn, what did you say, $48,000 a year? They're
mm-hmm.
28? Right. So if you earn $48,000 a year, actually you can earn up to about $107,000 as an individual and contribute your 28, well, whoever the person is 28, up to $5,000. If you're over 50, you can put another $1,000 into the Roth IRA for the catch-up provision. But a Roth 403B is separate money from that. And so, no, it shouldn't affect it.
Okay. So she can do both.
She should be able to do both. And if she can, you know, God bless. That's
yes.
Fantastic.
Yes. And I have one more kind of related question.
Uh-huh.
We are her parents, and we lent her money to go to school.
Okay.
Now she is going to be paying us back.
Okay.
How do I report it on my taxes?
Did you have a loan? Is she paying
yes.
you interest on the money?
Yes.
So
5%.
Okay, so you would report the interest earned just the way you would report, if you got interest from your bank?
No.
I'm saying if she's paying you interest,
mm-hmm.
you're going to report the interest to the government as income earned.
Okay.
Is this not your question?
No,
is this not the answer you were hoping for?
No. I don't. It doesn't really, like Clark Howard says, the parents can loan the children the money
yes.
at the going market rate.
Yes.
When it comes time for the kid to pay back the parents, how does one report it?
That's how you report it. You report it as interest earned. Not all of the payment is interest. Did you do an amortization schedule?
Right. We haven't done the amortization yet, but is it like a house mortgage and do the amortization
yes.
the same way?
You can, where you pay most of the interest up front and then principal on the back end, absolutely.
Or
and
could we do it the other way around?
But you could do it any way you want to do it. You
oh,
can
okay.
forgive. You can forgive up to $13,000 a year of the loan if you
right.
want to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can decide how you want to handle it, or if you want her to pay you back and pay you back more quickly or more slowly. I mean, you can decide what you want to do. And once you decide that, then you report that whatever interest you're getting on the money. You don't report principal payments.
Okay.
You
okay.
just report the interest.
Okay. So that's fine then. If it's just the interest, because I was wondering now, am I going to be paying taxes on my money twice?
No, you're going to be paying tax
okay.
on the interest that she's paying you.
Okay.
But if it's $500, right, whatever the interest is, that's what it's going to be if you're going to report that.
Okay.
Do you guys do your own taxes?
No, we have an accountant.
You should call your accountant and work on an amortization schedule that requires you to pay the least amount of tax on the interest that she's paying you.
Okay.
And then decide how you want to structure the payments going back, and if you're going to forgive some of these payments, how is the best way to do that that doesn't complicate your tax situation?
All right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show, Betty. 404-872-0750. We're going to be talking about foreclosures and short sales in a little while with our man on the street. Mark Tytel is in the studio getting ready to talk about what's going on in his office this week with foreclosures and short sales, and there certainly are plenty of them out there. Let's continue on, see if we can take another call. Paul joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Lise. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, this kind of leads into your guest in short sales and foreclosures. It's an IRA, self-directed for real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing a lot of research, and the more research I do, the more confused I am.
Welcome to my world.
The real estate, I mean, the IRAs itself, there's about $7 trillion held in retirement accounts, and only about 3% of the retirement accounts are self-directed, and only about 2% are invested in real estate. And I understand why it's not publicly known, but my question is, in this time of the marketplace, and it's kind of like history will repeat itself, the market will go up because of supply and demand. Unfortunately, the supply is being reduced, and the demand, it will come back. I'm convinced of that. It will come back. So for a lot of retired people, which I am, that have IRAs that are self-directed or not self-directed, they may have an opportunity to acquire real estate for a good 40 to 75 cents on a dollar.
Yes.
It would appear to me that the government would entice them to do that, to move some of this real estate. And I understand there's some strict guidelines. But are you aware of any person or place that one could get kind of more of a elementary understanding of it?
Well, we talked about self-directed IRAs at our last event on foreclosures, which was about a year ago or so. We had Monty, I think his name is Monty Smith from Entrust, came and spoke. And you can actually go to my website, thinklink.com, and click on the store and buy the podcast or his, we had a whole series of ebooks about investing in real estate. And we talked a lot about Entrust and self-directed IRAs. So I think there's a fair amount of information out there. There was a while when nobody was really sure if the IRS was going to approve these or not, but they've been proven, and people like them, and they like using them, and there are some very strict rules that you have to pay attention to, but you know, they're great. So that would be some place to go. And then if you wanted more information about it, I guess what I would do is try and find a couple of different self-directed IRA offices. And there are a bunch in Atlanta. Different companies have all set up shop in Georgia for exactly the reasons that you've said. And start to talk to them a little bit about what they're doing and what they think is, you know, a good idea. And that's really, you know, more information is better in this case. You really want to be, have so much information, you really understand where things are going. It's 47 minutes past the hour. Don't forget to pick up today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's a special report on how the Atlanta Public Schools can bounce back from scandal and who's in charge of stabilizing the system. It is 13 before the hour. I'm Elise Glink. This is News Talk 750 WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
52 minutes past the hour. News Talk 750 WSB. I keep saying that. It's AM 750, now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB. We have Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com with us in the studio. He's our man on the street regarding short sales and foreclosures. So, Mark, what's going on in your office this week?
Yes, good morning. We have lots of news that came out last week. And what it affects us specifically is the length of foreclosure that takes time now in our area. How much time does it take for the bank and lender to foreclose on people?
Well, how long did it used to, I mean, it used to take... Well, it's been taking years. There are some people who stopped paying 3 years ago and still haven't been foreclosed on.
That's correct. We have people that coming into the office with 24, 26 months behind on the payment.
Wow.
And what the numbers show that in 2007, it took just 4 months to process the foreclosure. But the average foreclosure in 2010 now takes about 9 months.
Wow.
And what we expect that in 2011 and 2012, that time of foreclosure process will take even longer.
And that's just simply because there are so many foreclosures out there?
No, the actual cause of this delay is that's going on behind the scenes. And what FDIC said, that they are investigating about 150 lawsuits that are going on across the country for the faulty foreclosures, robo-signing processes that's taking place with the foreclosure mill places, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is what prolongs. So banks right now are very careful and lenders are very careful how they process the foreclosure. They slow down the whole process. And we know that HUD right now, as of August 1st, initiated a new venture and a new way of helping people that are unemployed. What they have said that as of August 1st, if you're unemployed and you have FHA loan, you will be able for the next 12 months to look for a job before the lender can start processing your foreclosure.
Yes, they said that all FHA lenders will have to abide by this and give you a 12-month suspension of payments.
That's correct.
And then that amount will be added to the end of your loan, and we have no idea how that's going to be reported on people's credit, but that is something that is now going to be available.
That's correct. That means that all of those loans will have a foreclosure time taken even longer. So you don't pay. It used to be that I go to the closing table and I would bring a buyer, and the time of signing the loan documents, the closing attorney would say, well, this document in particular states, if you don't pay, you don't stay. The bank will foreclose on you. Not anymore so much. A lot of it, the foreclosure cannot take place as it used to be.
It's kind of interesting to think about how many homes are still out there, Mark. I heard a number this week that kind of made me cringe that said for every home that's currently in the foreclosure stream, there's another 50 that it's possible are would be going into foreclosure if things were operating in a normal basis. 50 to 1 seems really high to me that you could be talking, I don't know, about a lot of houses. What are you hearing out there?
Absolutely. That is exactly the numbers. And what we know that banks really have only 30% of their inventory on the market. 70% of them are as a shadow inventory. And every month we expect that they will start releasing those properties. And every month we as a real estate brokers get disappointed because we know the solution is not there and the properties are not on the market today.
So in other words, you are expecting a huge another huge wave of foreclosure properties, REOs, for your buyers, right? That's what you're saying?
Absolutely. That's correct.
That's amazing. And we know that banks really only have 5 years to sell foreclosed properties. They take them back, and then they have to get them out and off their books within 5 years. You know, I think in 2006 and 2007, people were thinking, oh, it won't take that long. But here we are 4 or 5 years later, and are you saying that some of those properties have got to be released? Is that what you're thinking?
Yes, they have to be released. But, you know, also we noticed that some lenders or some banks will not foreclose on people, even though they already vacated. They're no longer paying for it, but the bank just doesn't step up and don't do the foreclosure.
Yeah, that's sort of interesting. And that's causing a lot of problems for communities because nobody's paying the tax bill. The bank isn't taking care of the property. They're like, oh, we don't own it yet. But the owner doesn't own it either. They've mailed back the keys and they're done. So it's a very interesting legal situation if the bank won't actually officially take back the property.
I think so too. And I think if we just go back to the basic, if we just follow the law, I think we will get out of this crisis sooner rather later. But every time we come in with new plans, how to circumvent the law, how to extend this, to help socialize ideas to come in and just try to rescue things, we are just messing up more instead of really helping out.
All right, what's your one tip for buyers this week? What did you tell somebody in your office who's looking to buy? What helped this week?
Well, I think the most important thing is if you are interested in purchasing right now, find a home that you like, that you can hold on to it for the next 4 to 5 years so you're not worried that when you purchase a home, it's going to drop in value another 20 or 30%. You will enjoy what you have, and eventually you will recuperate any and all of the money that you invested in your home.
So it's really a five-year timeline.
That's what I expect.
I think that's probably true. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who runs the Harvard Center for Joint Housing Studies, and he's like, you know, it could be 2014, it could be 2017. There's really just a long road ahead for most of these foreclosures. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we will chat with you again next week.
Thank you. I will.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good week, everybody. Music starting. That means our time is over for today. Andy Dean is next. But you can always find me online at my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you're waiting for the announcement of our next event, sign up for the free weekly newsletter. You know that the best deal is always going to be available there, and you'll get the information faster than anywhere else, even on the air, I have to say. Thanks to Clint and Crystal for a great show. Have a great week, everybody. See you again soon.